Hello and welcome to Beating the Drum for Biodiversity. My name is Celia Carana and this is your podcast for understanding the importance of biodiversity for our health, our food and the survival of the planet. To our lovely listeners, we're joined today by Louise Denver, one of our other founding members of the Beats.org, our charity that kind of stands behind our podcast. Louise, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure, Celia.
So I suppose a bit about you. What made you want to get involved with the Beats?
Look, the truth of the matter is I'm a nature lover. And, you know, that's where I get my pleasure from being out in nature. And I'm also very concerned about climate change and very concerned about the planet. The point of the relationship between nature and climate change is obvious to all of us, I'm sure, but particularly when it comes to biodiversity and endangered and threatened species, which is what the word BEAT stands for, it's all about the habitat. And if you denude the habitat, you lose the rich biodiverse fauna and flora that we in Australia are so lucky to have. So I wanted to do something about it.
Awesome. I mean, much like everyone else, I think we love to be out in nature and don't necessarily know too much about the damage that we're doing at the moment and how we can better look after it. So I know, Louise, in your career, you've been an incredible journalist. So I'm definitely looking forward to learning a bit from you today in our recording. So I suppose with that in mind, who are we talking to today?
Well, we're going to have the pleasure of talking with Dr. Anika Molesworth. Anika describes herself as a farmer, a scientist, and a storyteller. She's going to let us know what her doctorate is in. And she is such a passionate person when I've heard her before. She was named an Australian Young Farmer of the Year in 2015. And more recently, she was named one of the Australian Financial Review's Women of Influence in 2019. And most recently, she was on both the ABC's The Drum and Channel 10's The Project. She's just a passionate person with some clear messages and actions.
Amazing. I can't wait to get into the story. So let's jump right in.
Fantastic.
Well, hi, Anika. Thank you so much for joining us for our podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. And before we get into things, I just want to ask you where you're joining us from today.
So I'm based on my family's sheep station in far western New South Wales on the beautiful red sands of Willakali country.
Amazing. It sounds beautiful. I'm very much looking forward to being able to visit such places when the lockdown ends.
Anika, I was lucky enough, I'm Louise, and I was lucky enough to hear you speak recently at a peace and climate seminar along with Professor Lachlan Blackhall from the ANU. And he was on about, you know, our country's capacity to not just build, but actually lead in the 21st energy system. And you also were able, despite the, you know, IPCC, give us some hope. And you shared your passion for action and the land, its biodiversity, and the fact that you had actually helped to found the Farmers for Climate Action. And you could share a little bit about how it all began with us, if you would.
Sure. Well, I guess the beginning is sort of how I became interested in the topic of sort of land conservation and looking after species and the willingness and the desire to do more, something about climate change. So my family purchased some land out here in far western New South Wales when I was 12 years old, and I had come from the city of Melbourne from a very urban upbringing. And out here, there are horizons that just go on forever. And I would wake up at the crack of dawn and just walk for hours across the most incredible landscape, not seeing a single other person, but I would see wallaroos and I would find emu nests and I would see the galahs roosting in the trees. And it just captivated me. And I fell very quickly and very easily in love with this landscape. And from that developed a real sense of desire to care for it. Because I think when we when we really love something and see how precious and unique it is, then we have that urge to do all that we can to look after it. When my family purchased the land, it was the year 2000, and that was the start of the decade-long millennium drought. And so those early years of falling in love with this landscape out here, this wild, untamed vista, and then seeing it become drier, the rain stop falling, the vegetation disappearing, the mud cracks appearing in the bottom of the dam, the dust storms rolling in the afternoons and turning day to night. It really opened my eyes of how incredibly fragile the environment is, and it filled me with a great sense of sadness seeing the land hurt in the way it was. And obviously that flows on to people, you know, that has great mental health implications. People were leaving the rural community, you know, migrating to the city. And my concern for what I was witnessing, I guess, propelled me to try and understand it, to learn as much as I could about the environment, about the climate, about how it's so connected to human well-being and stability. And so then, you know, fast forward over the years, I did a bachelor in science specializing in agribusiness, then a master's in sustainable agriculture, and then a PhD in environmental management and agriculture, also in different parts of the world, because I love the big picture and connecting the dots of how everything is interrelated. And that understanding of how we live in a very global and connected system, you know, we don't just operate as individuals.
You know, that connectivity presumably was what triggered that 2014 founding of the knowledge sharing platform, the Climate Wise Agriculture.
Yes.
Because from that platform, you can actually share and presumably use the power of the collective to make change.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I was at university doing my undergraduate at that point, and I was learning, you know, some really interesting things and really concerning things about the climate and the environmental degradation, the loss of species. And then yet I was reading Australian media about, you know, this climate debate that was happening and, you know, what is the science actually accurate? And what I was actually reading in the research seemed pretty solid, like there wasn't much wiggle room there. And then I was opening up mainstream media and going, this is being terribly, you know, communicated and just causing confusion, and that leading to inaction, people not knowing what to do or whether they had to do anything at all. And so I set up Climate-Wise Agriculture. And first it was just a Facebook page, and I was just posting research and articles and stories that I thought were useful and interesting. And from that, I guess I developed a bit of, you know, there were more people sort of gathering around me saying, yeah, I'm interested in this too, and I share these same concerns. And so Climate-Wise Agriculture grew when I started holding events out here in far western New South Wales, running webinars, sharing more information, writing blog articles, and building this real community of like-minded people around me. And that was fantastic, because so often when you're very isolated and very concerned, you can feel very lonely and lost on these issues. And so I think having those people who hold similar values, who hold similar concerns, who are going through the same emotional roller coaster of grief and despair at times, but also hanging on to hope and knowing that there are solutions out there. You need people to lean on sometimes.
So important. And so important to actually pull in the you know, to find the mass of concerned individuals. And I presume that's what probably delivered the 2015 Young Farmer of the Year award to you. Is that right, Anika?
It was. And I have to admit that I actually put myself for that award. And I say that because climate change is such an issue that we often find excuses why we shouldn't speak up. You know, we think, oh, now's not the right time. There's someone else better. I'll deal with this at a later date. And there is such an urgency to deal with it now that I don't think we can let that cynic in our mind, the procrastinator, that self-doubt that I can't do it or I'm not worth enough, hold us back. And so I said to myself at the time, I'm not going to let modesty hold me back from the action I want to see. And if I can win this award and talk on radio and write articles for the media about climate change and how it's impacting the farming community, then I'll do it. And I'm a very quiet and introverted person, actually. Like, I actually really don't like the limelight or media attention or standing on stage and speaking. But the importance of this issue makes me do it. And this is something that I write about in my upcoming book, is actually finding that courage to step out of our comfort zones and really do what we can right now.
Thank you, Anika. That, you know, and you've just taken delivery. I seem to recall a LinkedIn post of a truck delivering boxes of our sunburnt country. And the accolades around the book from Michael Mann, from Craig Rucastle, from Ross Garnaut are just brilliant.
Thank you.
You know, in it, it is a book of action. And it is a book that describes some of the ways that we can help to heal the planet. Can you just articulate a few for us to take away?
Yeah, well, I think it is very important that we acknowledge what the science is saying, because we have amazing, terrific researchers out there who are pulling together this wealth of knowledge. And we need to look at it and understand the seriousness, but not stop at that point where we feel overwhelmed and incapacitated by it, but actually go, okay, wow, we have this incredible wealth of understanding and knowledge. Let's use it. And we can use it. And there are so many ways that we can make changes in our lives, in our homes, in our kids' schools, in our businesses, in our communities, that actually, you know, accelerate this transition to a clean society, a clean economy, whatever one wants to call it, you know, the future that we all desperately want to get to, but are struggling to get there at the moment. So I obviously am in the farming and agricultural sector, and the agricultural sector has a very interesting story in climate change, in that we're one of the most vulnerable and exposed sectors to the impacts of climate change. We are a major contributor to the problem, but we also hold an abundance of solutions to actually deal with this problem. And by solutions in the agricultural sector, I mean there's amazing research being done on livestock feed and genetics to reduce methane emissions. There's terrific work being done in, you know, carbon sequestration and land revegetation projects, you know, improving biodiversity, all of those things. But I think it's also important to remember that we are all, everyone is very much involved in the food system. You don't actually have to be living and working on a farm. And even those in urban centres, the choices we make every time we sit down to our plate of food actually influences what's happening with our climate. And for instance, you know, choosing local, seasonal, generally plant-based foods that are not smothered in plastic and flown around the world. When we choose to finish a meal and eat the right portion instead of scraping half of the plate into the bin, all of those things reduce emissions and send a signal back down the food system of how and what we want the farmers to be producing. So it's very much connected, and we all play such an important role in this.
And I believe that, you know, in addition, Anika, that it's also what farmers can do in terms of conserving water, because you're in arid land, you're in red country, you know, river gums have been dying around that way. I understand that, you know, by being very focused you can actually water the roots of the plants rather than just spraying irrigation out there. So it's that conservation mindset as well as being very conscious of what we actually do in terms of us urban folk, in terms of what we eat and how we access it, that's so important.
Absolutely. And when we start to conserve and look after those natural resources, whether it's water or soil carbon or vegetation or biodiversity, there actually flows a lot of benefits in that you're saving power, you know, you're reducing electricity bills.
Awesome. Yeah, well, everything you've said so far is resonating incredibly. I definitely believe in the, you kind of invest in the future you want with your everyday purchases, and whether that be in the supermarkets and the food that you eat. So yeah, that's an incredible message that we're trying to get out to people. And also around like kind of not letting that climate anxiety kind of get on top of you. I think so many of us feel it so deeply. I'm very much looking forward to reading your book to kind of hear about how you tackle that. I recently read another book called The Future We Choose, which is written by the people who organized the climate summit in Paris. And they talk about this concept of stubborn optimism and how we have to be stubbornly optimistic in the face of this, because we don't really have a choice. We have to do what we can. So I know you've spoken about some of the practices, and I was wondering what practices you've implemented on your own farm and what benefits you've seen there.
Yeah. So one thing that we've done is we've sort of been involved in a few citizen science projects. Like, we are very curious about what species we find on our property. So we're the ones that go out, you know, late at night with our phones and record the sounds of frogs by the dam and send that information to the Australian Museum through their Frog ID app. We also take lots of photos and collect seeds from the native plant species to monitor what we have out here and how they're changing over time in distribution and prevalence. We identified a number of rare and threatened species on our property when we first came here, and so we established conservation reserves. So we've fenced off areas so they cannot be grazed to try and ensure the revegetation, the next generation to come through and to ease that pressure from grazers. We've also done other things like, you know, putting solar panels on the homestead roof so we're not, you know, emitting those fossil fuel generated greenhouse gases from our home and from our business. We had been running an African breed of sheep, which is a very drought tolerant, hardy type of sheep, which is more well suited to arid environments. However, saying that, it has been getting so hot and dry out here, and we're in about the fifth year of droughts now. We've destocked our property, so we've sold our sheep, and we're really at a point where we're asking, you know, will we actually be bringing sheep back onto this property, or are we doing something completely different? And I think this is important to note in that we often look to leaders and go, wow, they're a great role model. Like, they've got all the knowledge and all the skills, and, you know, they've woken up one morning and they know what to do. And that's not the case. Like, everyone is trying to figure out what they can do and how they can do it. And I think we are all in this constant state of learning, evolving, transitioning. And no one has woken up with all the answers and all the capabilities. Me especially, like, every day I'm trying to learn more about the landscape and listen to it closer and work out, okay, well, what can I tweak in my business, in my lifestyle, on our property to make sure that it's better tomorrow? And if we all have that, you know, mentality that we should all constantly be trying to learn and to listen and to understand and make these tweaks along the way, then I think we will be in a much better position.
And doing so by sharing the citizen science project with the museum, by sharing the information that you have, and then, you know, taking the huge effort it does take to write a book, to actually share that You know, Celia and I are definitely clapping our hands on this call. Celia, over to you to just close our conversation today.
Yeah, absolutely. So at The Beats, it's the charity that kind of sits behind the podcast. We have broken our kind of focus areas into three main areas. So think, feel and do. So we just want to wrap up the conversation around those three areas. So I'll rattle off the three questions and then hand over to you. So the first being in terms of think, like where can listeners go to find out more information about this topic? In terms of feel, how do you feel about the current climate crisis and how we're tracking? And then in terms of do, what would be like the key action that you would ask people to take away from this listen?
Brilliant questions. I love this. So think, I would send people to the Farmers for Climate Action website. They have some really good resources there for anyone who wants to understand more about how climate change is impacting the agricultural sector and what they can do to help. Feel how I'm feeling. I'm feeling really energized, actually. And it's not a Pollyanna, you know, faith that, you know, everything's going to be fine. It comes from a deep understanding of how serious the science is and the state of the planet, but also really understanding that we have so many solutions at our at the tips of our fingers. And there are so many people out there who are wanting to do something, who are asking what I can do. And I feel like we are at this social tipping point where change is going to come very quickly. And what do? Well, my book is being launched on Tuesday, and I would love people to read it because I have been very fortunate to interview so many people across the food system, farmers around the world, for this book. And I feel so honored and privileged to share their story about, you know, what they're facing with climate change, but also the visions they hold for a better future.
Yeah, we'll definitely put links in the show notes so everyone can go and find it. I think it will be after the 31st of August by the time we kind of publish. So it will be out and available to everyone from all good bookstores. So we will put the link in the show notes for sure.
Terrific. Thank you.
Anika, thank you so much on behalf of all of us.
Thank you so much, Louise and Celia. I really appreciate it.
Wow. Dr. Anika Molesworth, everyone. Isn't she incredible? I completely loved being part of that conversation, and I hope you enjoyed listening to it too. And thank you very much to Dr. Anika herself for being our first podcast guest. If you want to hear more from Dr. Anika, then this is a public service announcement to save the 14th of October in your calendars. We'll be hosting a virtual panel discussion with her and other special guests to discuss all things biodiversity and the actions we can take to save it. More details about how to register for this event will be released in subsequent episodes. So to make sure that you don't miss this crucial information, hit that subscribe button. And while you're there, if you could rate and review our podcast, that would mean the world to us. For more information on our charity, The Beats, please head over to our website, thebeats.org, and follow us on Instagram at thebeats_org. Now for the credits. This podcast was produced and edited by me, Celia Kavana. Our amazing podcast cover art and music was created by Vinod Rao. Full credit and license information for the original sounds used can be found on our website. And that's it. You've made it to the end. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.